Hello and welcome to The Word, bringing you the good news of Jesus Christ every day from the order of preachers around the world. Today, from the United States, we hear from Dr. Anne Garrido. Anne is an associate professor of homiletics at Aquinas Institute of Theology in St. Louis, Missouri. Her preaching is entitled, Don't Forget to Pray.
A reading from the book of Esther. Queen Esther, seized with mortal anguish, had recourse to the Lord. She lay prostrate upon the ground, together with her handmaidens, from morning until evening, and said, God of Abraham, God of Isaac, and God of Jacob, blessed are you. Help me, who am alone and have no help but you, for I am taking my life in my hand. As a child, I used to hear from the books of my forefathers that you, O Lord, always free those who are pleasing to you. Now help me, who am alone and have no one but you, O Lord, my God. And now come to help me, an orphan. Put in my mouth persuasive words in the presence of the lion, and turn his heart to hatred for our enemy, so that he and those who are in league with him may perish. Save us from the hand of our enemies. Turn our mourning into gladness, and our sorrows into wholeness. Next week, our Jewish brothers and sisters around the world will celebrate the Feast of Purim, the celebration of an ancient mythical event set around 450 years before the Common Era, when the Jewish community was living under threat of persecution by the Persian government, and in particular, the haughty Haman, right hand of the Persian king, Ahasuerus. Through the most bizarre of circumstances, a young Jewish orphan, Esther, comes to be married to Ahasuerus as the surprise winner of a beauty contest. The king seems to barely know Esther when they marry. He doesn't even know she's Jewish when he makes her queen, and he doesn't really seem to understand Haman's plot to wipe out the Jewish people. But at the insistence of her uncle, Esther becomes part of a plot to alert the king about Haman's motives and try to get him to intervene. It's a dangerous plot. As a woman, even as queen, Esther has no real voice or power. She can't even go to the king without being summoned. If she's so brazen as to approach the king on her own and he doesn't respond well, she could get her head chopped off. But her uncle ups the pressure. Young and scared though she is, he reminds Esther that she is the only Jew who has any access to the king. In a line that has become famous through the ages, her uncle suggests, "Who knows? Perhaps it was for such a time as this that you became queen." The text we read immediately follows the scene with her uncle. Esther, struck between a rock and a hard place, falls not just to her knees but to the floor and begs God for help, truly begs. You can hear the terror and desperation in her voice. You can also hear her honesty. She doesn't hide her raw wishes from God or even try to refine her words. She wants Haman and all his minions dead. And if we were to keep reading, we'd discover that God answers Esther's prayer. Well, sort of. Kind of. Maybe. You see, the weird thing about the book of Esther is that God does very little at all. In fact, in the original Hebrew version of the text, in contrast to the later Greek version that we read from in the Catholic Church, the word God never appears at all. The original version doesn't even include the prayer that we just read. Esther does go to the king with great trepidation. The king does listen to her. Haman and his whole family are killed. The Jewish people are saved. Everything goes topsy-turvy and the world seems to turn upside down. But unlike so many other Jewish stories in which God is an active, visible participant, think God hardening the Pharaoh's heart, or God parting the Red Sea, or God holding back Abraham's hand before the slaughter of Isaac. In the most ancient version of this text, God is never mentioned. God is at best only a hidden character. Indeed, some Jewish interpreters today suggest that the name of the protagonist Esther might be a play on the Hebrew word nestra, meaning hidden or secret, or mister, from which we derive our English word mystery. If God is at work in the outcome of this story, it's only in very hidden ways, through the actions of the Jewish characters, who are a mixed bag of anxiety and courage, dubious sexual mores and purity of heart. They are powerful and powerless, small and arrogant, savvy and naive, all at the same time, or at least all in short succession. People who are desperately trying to figure out what is the best and most effective thing that they can do in the middle of a culture not of their own choosing. People, maybe a little like ourselves. And even though it reads like what one of my Jewish colleagues last week described as a Jewish fantasy novel, it simultaneously feels realistic, because this is so often the way that God seems to work in our world. We pray, but it's not really clear where God is and what comes next. History continues to unfold in the most mysterious of ways. Esther finds the strength and sense of agency needed to plead her case. Is that the strength of Esther or of God? Haman and his family are not only killed but impaled on stakes. Is that the will of God or of Esther? How do we tell? Can we ever know? The action of God in history is often so difficult to discern, and the storyline so messy and intertwined with human action. So much seems to depend on who tells the story, and so much remains nistero, hidden. For many of us, every day feels like we are sitting at the crosshairs of that mystery. The mystery of God's will in ours, God's action in ours. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you how difficult it can be to tell the difference, or how challenging a place that is to live. By the selection pulled out of the Esther novella for us to reflect on today, we might surmise that part of the way we continue to live in the mystery of all that is, from the church's point of view, is a constant return to prayer. There's very little of Esther that appears in the Catholic lectionary, and in fact, the passage that we read today is the only one that appears regularly and always at the same time of year, mid-February through mid-March. That timing might be a respectful nod to our Jewish sisters and brothers in the midst of Purim, but equally as likely, it's because for those of us in the Christian tradition, mid-February through mid-March marks the beginning of the season of Lent, that time of year when we remember that the messy world in which we live, where God feels so hidden, the three best practices we have for trying to align our lives with the will of God are fasting, almsgiving, and ongoing prayer. Both in times when we feel persecuted and in times when we feel victorious, in times when history seems to be in our favor and in times when it does not, we can fall on our knees, even indeed to the floor, and beg God's help. As today's reading models, prayer is a space in which we can be totally honest and unfiltered, where our words and our wishes need not be polished or even kind. It's the place where we open ourselves to whatever obvious and not so obvious ways God might have of answering those prayers in and through us, imperfect though we may be, and seek some understanding. Note, it's also the place where we can ask that whatever happens, no matter how messy things get, our own actions always be in alignment with God's mysterious will. Sidebar to the Esther story, it's hard to imagine that ordering the impaling of our enemies would ever fit that bill. I'm not sure where you are with all that's going on in the world and the church this Lenten season. If you're anything like me, you might click through the channels at night thinking, I wish I'd been born in another century. But who knows? Perhaps it was for this very moment in time that you were chosen to play a unique role. No need to fear, no need to be perfect, no need to grasp where God's hand is clearly at work in all of it quite yet. Just fall to your knees, fall to the floor if you must, but with the honesty of Esther, don't forget to pray. Thank you.